OWC Radio number 28, an interview on the John Lennon bus. Hey everyone, Tim Robertson here, OWC Radio, episode number 28. Like I said, this is going to feature an interview that I conducted last week on the John Lennon bus at NAMM. But I'll get to that in a second. But first, number one, sorry there was no episode last week. Here's what happened. It's been a crazy 2-3 weeks for me. Of course, I was at CES, and that's what we covered on the last episode. And that is in Las Vegas. So I get back from Las Vegas, and a week later, I go to Orlando, Florida, where I am shopping a show, and I've discussed what that was in the past. It's a technology show that, you know, or technology shows, I should say, that OWC may or may not participate in the future, but we don't know until someone actually goes to the show, scopes it out, see if it's the audience that's right for the business that we want to go. We want to become a sponsor. It's doing due diligence, really. And the show that I saw was the FETC, the Florida Educational Technology Conference. Great show, by the way. I was there for 2 days, and that was in Orlando, Florida. And then the same week that I was in Orlando, I flew from Orlando to L.A. to attend the NAMM event. NAMM is a huge musical show. You know, they show a lot of, they have a lot of technology, a lot of the new musical instruments, and basically it's a conference for musicians. And I've never been to either one of these shows. They were both very big shows, very different shows. One is educators, IT professionals within school districts, administrators at those school districts, very tech heavy, but yet educational. It was great. There's a lot of companies there. I actually saw some people that I knew, which I don't know why that surprises me. I know a lot of people, not just from doing OWC Radio and all the podcasts that I've been doing for the last 11 years, or, you know, my online publications, or just knowing people on Facebook and Twitter. I know a lot of people. But yet it still surprises me when I run across someone that I actually know far away from home, or far away from my normal stomping grounds, if you will. So I saw a few people at the FETC show that I knew, and it was great to see them. It's a fantastic show. I don't know if OWC is going to be there next year, but maybe, because it really was a good show. And there was people there from all over the United States. It wasn't just Florida. From looking at name badges, I'd say it was probably 60% local Florida education institutions, but the other 40% was from all over the United States. I saw people from Louisiana, New York, California, Maine, Tennessee, Illinois. So it's a huge technology show that's really geared towards education. And our products obviously fit right in that demographic very, very well. And it was a great time at the FETC. It was Orlando, so the weather was beautiful compared to what it is here where I'm recording in Michigan. It's cold, it's wintry. So going down and seeing palm trees, I actually felt kind of guilty that my wife is at home shoveling snow and I'm sitting there enjoying beautiful weather. NAMM, on the other hand, is both music professionals and musicians. So you see the suit and tie crowd, very professional. And then you see right behind him walking in the door, a guy with hair all the way down his back wearing a leather coat with spikes on it. And it's the same show, you know, they're there for the same reasons. And it was cool. I really liked it. The NAMM show was especially cool because I got to go into the John Lennon bus and conduct an interview, which is going to be in the second half of this episode of OWC Radio. Now, OWC is a sponsor of the John Lennon bus. This bus travels all over the United States, and there's a sister bus, or maybe it's a brother bus, I don't know how, I think it'd be called a sister bus, yes? In Europe that does the same thing. And they go to school districts and events like this, and they're really about promoting, creating music, and working with kids. And they get a lot of stars, a lot of celebrities in the music industry that come in and do this as well. In fact, George Clinton was at the John Lennon bus signing autographs and promoting the bus. He had a concert later that night as well that was promoted by the John Lennon bus. And of course, as the sponsor of the John Lennon bus ourselves, you know, we get our name on the side of the bus and we give away some prizes at their events. So it's an honor for us to be involved in a really great endeavor. Moby showed up and was actually in the John Lennon bus with George Clinton. That was really cool. I was walking inside the actual convention center, and I saw right in front of me maybe 20 people stopping in this aisle taking photos. And as I was walking through, I looked at someone. I said, "What's everyone taking photos of?" And the guy pointed and he says, "It's Stevie Wonder." And sure enough, there's Stevie Wonder 20 feet away from me. So, of course, I took a couple pictures with my iPhone 6 Plus. They came out great. And maybe 5 minutes later, I'm down another aisle standing there checking the Twitter feed. And Stevie Wonder walks right by me with his entourage. And it's kind of neat to see someone. Look, it's Stevie Wonder. I mean, I grew up with his music. I love his music. Well, not all of it. There was a little bit of a time frame in the 80s that I was like, eh, but then he righted the ship. Stevie Wonder's a brilliant artist. In my opinion, he's musical royalty. I'd say that's fair, don't you? I mean, it's Stevie Wonder. So it's the kind of event that you will see a huge cross of the business professional, the up-and-coming guitar player. There was this 11-year-old kid that I saw going into this booth, and he picked up a guitar and just, he was shredding on it. 11 years old. It was one of the best I've ever heard. I mean, he was just fantastic. And then I'm in another part of the hall, and I see three guys, a couple of guys on sax, one on a bass, the stand-up bass, and they were just jamming, and it was so good. I videotaped that a little bit. It was an amazing show. Will OWC be there next year? I don't know. That's not for me to decide. But there's a lot of people using Apple equipment to record their music on, and it was all over the showroom floor. Apple has a strong presence in the creative community. They have since day one. It's not the only computing platform that's used in the creative arts, but from what I've seen, my own personal observations, it's the most popular because it's the machine that's just going to work for you. You don't have to worry about all the things that you have to worry about on the PC side. And Macs were very well represented. But here's the other thing. So was iOS devices, and by that I mean iPads. I saw a lot of companies at NAMM and the FETC, to be honest, that were using iPads in ways that I never even thought about. Some of the shows that, or some of the booths that I saw at NAMM, they were using the iPad as more of a music notation device. Some were using it as, you know, it's on their stand and they're flipping pages on their iPad as they're playing the music. At the FETC show, they're showing, a lot of companies are showing their educational apps. A lot of companies have cases and ways to charge and store iPads in an educational institution. So if you've got a school and you got a classroom and you've got 30 iPads, I saw a lot of solutions at the FETC show that here's where you put your iPads in this cart that charges and stores them and locks them. It's really cool. I got to be honest with you. The iPad is such a multi-use device now, just like the Mac is. But it has very specific usages in those industries. And I don't see that going away. In fact, I see it increasing. So it was nice to see. It was nice to see all this different technology being used in two totally separate industries, the music creative world and the educational world. And yet, there's a lot of crossover between usage and what they're doing with the devices and some of the software that they're using. It was cool. But, like I was alluding to earlier, that's a lot of travel. So I went from Las Vegas to Orlando to Los Angeles, all within basically a two-week time frame. And the one thing that, you know, took a hit because of that was OWC Radio, kind of. I did record content at the NAMM show, like I said. So I'm going to have that right here on this episode. It was a fun interview. I mean, I was in the bus. You'll hear background noises. Now, my mic is pretty directional, so you don't hear really, really loud in the background, but there was just music playing everywhere, huge crowds. I was hoping that my mic wasn't picking too much of that up and would be a distraction for the actual interview, but I listened to it back. I skimmed through it, and it's good. One of the things I love is hearing from all of you. So if you want to send feedback, I would really appreciate it. Easy to do. It's just owcradio@maxsales.com. owcradio@maxsales.com. Michael from the Retro Computing Roundtable and, of course, Retrospective Blog writes in and says, "Tim, up until the announcement and press release, to me this was Transwarp." And he's got this link to the Transwarp GS from the Apple site. "And having fortuitously just purchased a 120 gig SSD from the Area 51 sale," by the way, that's, I'll get to that in a second. "It was just going to be the new boot drive I was going to install on my OWC multi-mount. And the next purchase was going to be Software 8.5 for the free NAS server that he's got going on in his Mac Pro. Now with Transwarp being added to the mix, looks like my old but enhanced Mac Pro is going to be kicking butt for many more years. Cheers, Michael." Thanks, Michael. Yeah, the Transwarp, you know, we did the interview on the last episode. I can't wait for this thing to come out, personally. It's I'm going to run it on the machine that I'm using right now. That's going to be the machine I initially put Transwarp on, which is my power... I almost said PowerBook. That's showing my age there, right? My 15-inch MacBook Pro. I've got two. I've got one with an SSD and a regular hard drive in it. And I've got the one that I'm recording that I'm using right now to record this podcast, which is only a standard hard drive. I don't have an SSD in it. So this is the machine that I'm going to use to test out Transwarp when it comes out. I can't wait. It's the idea behind it, the technology behind it is just fascinating to me. And look, I'm a gadget guy. I love cool software. I love cool hardware. And if it's something that will make things faster and better, I'm off for that, you know? So I can't wait. I'm really looking forward to it. He was talking about the Area 51 sale. Now, if you're not following us on Twitter and Facebook, you may not be aware that we actually have sales that happen all the time. And the best way, or at least one of the ways to stay on top of when things go on sale, is to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. And that is one of the first ways you're going to hear about these sales. There's another way, though. We have an OWC Hot Blast or Hot Deals Blast newsletter that we send out 5 to 7 times a month. And as a subscriber of it, you're going to learn before anybody else, even before social media, about the sales. We send out the emails, and about 24 hours, about a day later, is when we start promoting it on social media and Twitter. This way, anyone who's subscribed to this newsletter is going to get first dibs, because let's be honest, some of the things that we put on sale, there's a limited number. There's been times that we've had a sale on a particular used MacBook, and, you know, maybe 20 of them, and they're gone before I even get to promote it on Twitter and Facebook, because the people on the newsletter, they got to learn about it first, and they're gone fast. So if you're interested in subscribing, I'm going to put a link right in the show notes for episode number 28 to the OWC Hot Deals Blast newsletter. You can also find it on the main site, maxsales.com, and look for the newsletter icon. Click that, subscribe, and look, we're not going to flood your email with a whole bunch of spam. That's not going to happen. It's just 5 to 7 times a month, you'll get one email with some deals. And it's deals that you're going to get early access to before anybody else. So, hey, if you're like me, I like to know about things before anybody else. That way I can get the deal. You know, I hope you're checking out our blog. It is blog.maxsales.com. We ran across something a week ago that I thought was really, really cool. And it came out of the blue, to be honest. It was a behind-the-scenes look at Inside the NFL. Now, if you're not a football fan, you probably could care less. But Inside the NFL is one of the longest-running shows about the National Football League. And this whole little video is about how they get information from games back to the studio, how they edit so fast. And for us, we were honored to see, as they're showing all this stuff, they showed two of our products. They showed OWC SSDs, and they showed our Voyager in action. And they were both integral to the operation of the NFL. We thought, that's amazing. So there is a behind-the-scenes look blog post at, again, blog.maxsales.com with this video. You can watch it right there. It's pretty cool. Not just because the OWC stuff is in there, but because this is behind the scenes of the NFL. I'm a football fan, so that's why I watched it to begin with. And then when I saw, OWC products, I was like, hey, look at it. Hey, got to send an email to everyone. So that was pretty cool. Check that out, if you will. In the meantime, I've got Brian and Jeff coming up here from the John Lennon bus for this conversation/interview. It's such an inspirational thing to be in the bus to hear what they're doing. If you are interested and you want to see the John Lennon bus yourself, I'm going to have a link to their website so you can find out what the schedule is. Hopefully it's going to be in your area within the next year or so. If it is, go check it out. Growing up, I wasn't a Beatles fan. The Beatles were my parents' music. It wasn't my music. And as for the most part, I think when you're growing up, you don't like your parents' music. Ugh, that's old stuff. You want your stuff, right? And every generation does that. I remember when John Lennon died, I was 11 years old. And I remember my parents were just devastated. It really, really affected them. And I understood that it was, one of their musical heroes. But I didn't understand the full impact of who John Lennon was and what he represented until, much later in life. And of course, kind of like every generation, I went back and then I discovered the Beatles. I became a huge fan of the Beatles. And obviously John Lennon and Paul McCartney, the other guys. I became a huge fan. But it wasn't when I was younger. It was when I got older and I realized how good the music was. I was like, this is fantastic. Why didn't I like this when I was young? Again, it's the rebellious. I don't want to listen to the stuff that my parents like. I want to listen to the stuff that I like, which I know my parents hate. That's just how it goes. So I'm in my 40s. I have a great respect for John Lennon, his message and what he stood for, and obviously the music, because that's kind of where it starts, isn't it, with the Beatles. So for me to be able to go into the John Lennon bus and really talk to the guys in there and do this interview, I was honored. It was just really cool. I really hope that you enjoy this interview. It's a little different than what I've done before, but I had a great time. I think you guys will have a great time listening to it. I would love feedback on this episode or any episode. And again, if you have any tech questions, you can't figure out something, let me know. If I can't figure out the answer, I will find someone who can. OWC has been in business for a very long time, dealing with a lot of different Apple issues, Mac issues, iPad, iOS. If I can't find an answer, it doesn't exist. So if you have a question, let me know. We'll find the answer and we'll share it right here on OWC Radio. Again, it's OWC Radio at MacSales.com. And look, if you're thinking about upgrading your Mac, you need a new phone case, go to MacSales.com. We've got everything covered that you need for your Mac, for your iPhone, for your iPad. In the meantime, let's jump over to this John Lennon bus interview, and let me know what you think. Take it easy, guys. In the John Lennon bus, John Lennon educational tour bus. I've been trying to figure out what I would call this. It's a mobile inspirational bus. I like that. Educational inspirational bus. How about that? Okay. I'm with Brian. He is, what do you do with the John Lennon bus?
I'm the co-founder and the executive director.
Which means it's your fault.
Which means it's my fault, exactly.
So OWC is a sponsor of the John Lennon Bus. Could you explain what the mission of the John Lennon Bus is to the listeners who've never heard of it, is thinking, what is this? If this comes to my area, is it something that I should look at? Just kind of expound on this a little bit.
Yeah. So this is a project that we started 18 years ago now. It's an outgrowth of the John Lennon Songwriting Contest that started the year before, and we can talk about that as well. But the bus has a mission to provide young people with free hands-on opportunities to create original songs, original music videos, short films, documentaries. We do a lot of live stream productions on board, and we've begun to get into games and game app development too, but regardless of the topic or the workflow, it's about engaging young people in these creative opportunities, providing them with career path options, first-time experiences. Many times our students don't have any background with music or arts or even digital media production at all. It's their first time they're strumming a guitar or hearing themselves on a mic or touching a keyboard. So it's a world-class recording studio on wheels that travels all over the United States and Canada.
You know, it's not the best of economic times here in the United States, and it seems like when school districts have economic problems, one of the first things they tend to cut is the music programs. Now, as someone personally who went through band from junior high all the way through high school, who's got kids that, three of them so far, that's been through band or are currently in band, I know the benefits of music in schools. Is that something that you guys try to reinforce with the educators that come through?
Yeah, that's a good thing that you're touching on, because obviously having the great John Lennon's name on the bus attracts a lot of attention. So we're really strong believers in using that celebrity, kind of in the same way that John and Yoko use their celebrity, to call attention to the importance of music education and to use the bus as a lightning rod, you know, to attract attention. And one of the programs that we've really developed over the last couple of years is with the NAMM Foundation. And that's a program that brings the bus to different markets for residencies, two-day residencies with the NAMM Foundation. Day one, we're doing a session with students on board. And day two, we're part of the NAMM Foundation Support Music Coalition meetings. These are get-togethers that bring the superintendents of the schools, the decision-makers, the elected officials, educators, people who are stakeholders in music education in those communities, for better or for worse, to discuss what's working, to discuss best practices, to share those with other communities that may not be doing as well, and to give a leg up to those communities that see the value, understand why music education is, you know, perhaps the great unsung hero that brings people together in a way that provides a lifelong opportunity to engage in making music.
Did you think when you started this that there'd be so much politics involved in creating music and of giving kids an opportunity to do something like this? Because really, at the end of the day, you have to play politics with some of these people to get these music programs continuing to run and
keep the funding there and keep the attention on it that it deserves.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you asked me if I was thinking about that at the initial, you know, inception of the idea, no, that wasn't, you know, the first thought. It was really the simple kind of joy and experience of sharing knowledge, sharing technology, sharing resources with young people. But once we got the first few years under our belt, we also, again, going back to the power of John Lennon's name and his legacy, you know, we saw that we had an opportunity. We had a soapbox, you know. John and Yoko created the Bed In for Peace.
And they were very political themselves. So, I mean, it is kind of a natural fit.
Absolutely. And, you know, you'll see the words Imagine Peace on the Lennon bus on the exterior, interior. We have a replica, the only replica in the world of Yoko Ono's Imagine Peace Tower. The real one is in Reykjavik in Iceland. It's a project that she had conceived of around the time that she first met John, and he really liked the idea of it. It was just a concept, and they talked about it over the years, and she actually made it a reality in 2008. It's a big beam of light that shines up from this very, very beautiful art installation. It says, "Imagine peace in all the languages of the world." You can see the light beam from outer space. It's lit up every year from his birthday, October 9th, to the day he died, December 8th, each year. And then on special holidays and other events, it will be lit up. The one we have on board here is a kind of a jumping off point. It provides the opportunity for our visitors to get a little taste of what John and Yoko did. And without being really heavy-handed, it gives us the license, if you will, to talk about peace. And, you know, that's something that we found that kids don't hear enough about. Obviously, adults don't hear enough about it, but especially for our kids, if we don't talk about peace, if we don't talk about it as something that we need to work towards, then how could we ever expect it to happen? It's not going to happen just by itself. So, you know, imagine peace means make that something that you're thinking about and hopefully working towards.
It's hard to believe that it's been over 30 years since John Lennon passed away. Is there a lot of education when you have the students come in to kind of explain who he was? Because I imagine there's a lot of students, they have no idea who John Lennon is, or even the Beatles for that matter.
Yeah, I was just talking about this again yesterday. You know, it's been an evolution that I've seen. I think the internet has played a big role in this, because in 1998, when we started, there was still kind of more traditional way of young people listening to music, where they were getting their music from. You know, when I was growing up, we listened to, you know, the one or two stations that we listened to. I mean, it was either black music or white music. And today, there's every possible cultural influence is at your fingertips.
There is no white music or black music anymore. It's just music now.
Yeah, I mean, it always was that way, but you know what I'm saying. And again, for our students, they're hearing classic rock and thinking that it's super, super cool, because it is, and it also doesn't have all of the, you know, the same, well, usually not the same, you know, marketing and advertising and all the hype. It's authentic, you know, to use the now kind of often overused word. It is authentic, and kids feel that. But to talk directly to your, you know, question about, you know, what do they know, it runs the whole gamut. You know, you have kids who come on, they don't know who the Beatles are. It's pretty rare, but it happens. And if they don't, and you play them snippets of Beatles songs, they know the songs. So it's not so bad. But on the other side, there are a lot of kids who come on who are just absolute fans, who know a lot more than I do about a lot of the tracks, who are, you know, themselves big John Lennon fans. So you know, the bus and the kind of social connection that the bus brings together through Facebook and Twitter and Instagram shows that, you know, we have a healthy presence of, you know, older people who love the Beatles and love John Lennon, love the mission of the bus. But the lion's share are the younger people. That's who the facility is really for.
Before I get into the technology that's really impressive that I can see from where I'm sitting in the bus, I have to know, this is my very first question I walked up to the bus yesterday, is what involvement does Yoko Ono have with the bus?
Yeah, well, obviously, you know, when we first had the idea for it, it's something that she needed to like and approve of, and that happened right away. She immediately liked it and has been quoted as saying she really feels it's a project that, that John would have loved. And over the years, she's been very involved in plans and choices about how we would roll the next bus out, which was Lennon Bus Europe that we launched in 2013. She's a benefactor to the 501c3 nonprofit as well, and is very committed to the expansion of buses into other parts of the world. So yeah, she's done a number of events with us over the years. She was here at NAMM with us a few years ago too. So
when I'm not here, of course.
Yeah, we'll have to try to fix that.
I have to imagine back in, you said 98 that started, correct?
Yeah.
98, the equipment must have been vastly different than what you have in the bus now, and I have to imagine it would take more space. Has the miniaturization of a lot of stuff, like the TriCasters, like the SSDs and the hard drives, you get so much more space, has that impacted what you can do on the bus that you couldn't do in the past?
Well, my first reaction to that is really the aesthetic, which is, you know, has nothing to do with the tech. Because, yeah, everything's a lot smaller. The computer displays in the original bus, you know, seemed like they were 3 feet deep, you know, so it took up so much of the space. And I think also the idea in those days was, you know, you wanted to see all of this gear. Like, you know, you fill up every rack space, fill up every square inch so that it's just, like, going to blow you away with how much stuff's in there. But now I think we are all in agreement that, you know, we like the openness. We like the ability to have a project develop and have the space to, you know, bring other things in. Sometimes musicians show up with what's the Australian one that we had yesterday? The didgeridoo? Yeah. So, you know, there's that. On the more technical side, I guess one of the great things about it is that it does demonstrate, as cool as the studio is, that for, you know, most needs, these are things that any student could have for themselves potentially, you know, that they could work towards getting or can find ways of being able to record themselves at home, to create video at home. You know, it's obviously, you know, much, much, much more accessible to a young person than it was in 1998. You could do most anything with your iPhone today. So
is that something that you kind of stress when they see all this impressive equipment and they think, oh, I couldn't possibly do this kind of thing at home? How do you stress that actually you can do this at home with even something as free as GarageBand and a basic Mac?
Yeah, well, I mean, we tell them, you know, and it's increasingly easy to tell them. You know, we always wanted to be, you know, a force that could be a change in a young person's life, to for them to take control of their ideas and to be able to share their ideas. But it wasn't always that easy for us. You know, before we had Apple on board, we used to have a lot of computer crashes, and, you know, it was very, very frustrating. So I guess, you know, that's something that when they're in session, the crew that lives on board, if I haven't mentioned that, there are three.
Yeah, I was going to say, this, people actually live on this bus 10 months out of the year?
Yeah, there are three crew members who are young audio engineers who are also video producers, they're educators, they're musicians, they're songwriters. They're incredible people.
Where do you find people that would give up 10 months of the year of their lives to be on the bus and still has that kind of technical and musical background?
Prisons and...
I wasn't going to say anything. I saw the orange jumpsuits in the back. Work release programs. You know? So for you personally, what's been the most rewarding thing since 98? What is it about this bus that brings you back in day after day to oversee the operation and to plan it and to staff it? What's the most rewarding for you personally?
I do wonder that sometimes, but no, all kidding aside, really, it's knowing that it's out there fighting the good fight, it's doing the work, it's delivering the services that it's intended to deliver. This week, while we've been at NAMM, we had George Clinton and Moby both on. George has been producing a session Spent a full 2 days on board with students from Berklee College. You came from the Berklee City Music Network program, and seeing it being used that way, seeing you know, George Clinton himself wanting to take the time to work with these young people and doing it in such a lovely way, you know, like real positivism.
This isn't like you paid him money to come do this. Exactly. This is him volunteering his time, because the John Lennon Bus is a nonprofit.
Correct. Yeah, no, he did not get paid for this. And it's something that he's known about the bus. He was actually on an earlier version of the bus at Woodstock 99 when he first saw it there. And we've stayed in touch over the years. And then at last year's NAMM show, when Sheila E. was performing, he was really captivated and said, I want to do this. I want to do a session with the students. I want to play the Imagine Party that's going on tonight. He believes in music education. He believes in transformation. He believes in putting your energies where your mouth is. And we've never, in all of our years, and we've had a lot of amazing celebrity artists who've come on, you know, nobody has, you know, ever done more than Mr. George Clinton has in taking the time to be involved from beginning to end on a project like this.
I imagine it's probably not too difficult to get celebrity artists involved, because number one, it's John Lennon's name, and number two, it's education. Two things that I think almost every mainstream, and even the ones that aren't mainstream, it's very important to them.
I think that's something that they find inside themselves, and if they have the time to do it, then they do it. You know, the tough thing is getting, you know, the busiest, hottest, you know, artist of the time. And, you know, and obviously we like the mentoring, that's number one, but in a world of, you know, media oversaturation and everything, when we have stars on the bus, it helps us get attention, it helps us cut through, it helps us bring attention to the partners and the sponsors like OWC, who make the bus, you know, possible. And we should talk about all of that too, because, you know, most every single thing that's on this bus is provided by the partners and the sponsors that are involved with the Lennon Bus.
Well, I know we're very happy with the partnership. It's a cause that we actually believe in a lot, and it's great that, you know, a company like OWC can be involved in the John Lennon Bus, so we're happy to promote it. We obviously, if anybody follows us on Twitter and Facebook, they've seen the post about the John Lennon Bus there. And let's talk a little bit about the equipment. What kind of computer gear do you have in this bus that people would probably be surprised about?
Well, I think if we're going to talk in depth about tech stuff, I'm going to bring our chief engineer, Jeff Sobel, in to discuss it. But I guess I'll go as far as to say we have the new two of the new Mac Pros.
I can see them over there right now.
Okay. Jeff is the chief engineer. He started off as an onboard engineer. He lived on board the Lennon Bus for 3-plus years. I knew we had someone very unusual when he would just almost never take a break and would spend all of the off time wanting to make sure that the patch panel was done properly or that we were upgraded with whatever the software was. So he's just a very obsessively compulsive, beautiful person.
So Jeff, the bus is kind of your baby at this point, yes?
Yeah, it is. I have the privilege of overseeing the design and the build of this bus, and also the one that's in Europe that we launched in 2013. So yeah, I very much feel like it's my baby.
Technology changes quickly. I have to imagine that you also have to keep on top of the latest technological changes. What kind of education do you give yourself to stay on top of what's going on and make sure that the John Lennon bus is a state-of-the-art bus? When people come in, it's very impressive.
That's just an ongoing, it's basically a part of my day. Every day is involved in seeing what's developing, what's, you know, coming down the pipe, what's now been released, and what I feel is now at a point where it's, you know, really, really stable. The Lennon bus works basically every day. It's a very high intensity, high volume production environment. So we need to make sure that when we integrate a solution, it's bulletproof, because there's really no place for downtime on the bus.
Yeah, I don't want anyone to get the impression that this is some kind of a rolling museum. That's not what this is. This is a musical studio on wheels, as sophisticated as anything that you'll ever see. And it has to work every day.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. So the solutions that we choose to put on board are the solutions that we've found are just the best in the field, really kind of bar none. So we're really, really fortunate to have the sponsors and partners that we do to put in these solutions. I go and I look out, you know, for what's going to be the best hardware and software combination solutions and what are the peripherals that make it all work together. And so, yeah, we do have the new Apple Mac Pros. They're in Sonnet Technologies chassis, which allow us to run the hardware peripherals that we need to be able to connect, which go in over Thunderbolt. And then those also incorporate drive bays, which are populated by OWC's SSDs, the Mercury Electras, and that provides us really, really reliable, roadworthy, that's a big factor, hardware that meets our needs.
Has there been any kind of transformative technology within the last 5 years that's really changed the way your workflow on the bus works?
You know, we've seen technology evolve so much over the last 5-10 years, and everything has gotten more powerful and smaller, obviously. And to me, the biggest part of that is kind of what Brian touched on earlier. Technology is getting out of the way of people. It's creating space for people. It's creating space for more people to work together, both in a room as well as remotely through some online technologies. And to that effect, I think one of the great things that we're seeing is the power of mobile devices like iPads become really a real part of music and video production. And you can shoot amazing video on a new iPhone. You can edit it. There is amazing music production apps. And they integrate with the workflows that we use in studios now as well, really well. So you can start a group of kids creating a track or creating a beat on iPads, and then you know, and they can all be working collaboratively or individually, and then we can bring it all together in the studio. And it's amazing what you can do now. It's like having, you know, a dozen studios in what was originally two studios, because everyone has a studio in their hands now.
I've got a microphone and I hear live music playing, and I actually know the lyrics to the song, so this is weird. And trust me, you do not want to hear me sing. I've got a singing voice perfect for podcasting talk. So so what's the future of the Lennon bus? Where do you see the bus moving forward?
Well, we're working on some ideas for Lennon buses in other parts of the world. But I think the other thing is to find the way to create the opportunity for people to interact with the Lennon bus wherever they are, using their smartphones, collaborating with each other, young people collaborating with each other remotely and in real time, for us to continue to be a lightning rod for music education advocacy. Those are a few things.
Before we wrap up here, where can people online go to get more information, schedule where you're going to be, what the mission statement is, if they didn't quite hear everything because of the loud music in the background? Where can they go online to get more information?
Yeah, the best place to start is on our website. It's lennonbus.org. You can learn about the tour schedule. You can request a stop by the bus. You can see links to all of our videos, which are also up on our YouTube channel. All of the content is fed out from our
YouTube. That was going to be my last question. What happens with the content that you actually produce on the bus? Because I got to imagine that's a lot of content. Yeah. You just don't throw it away at the end of a session.
Of course not. Yeah. So every project is put up and fed through our YouTube channel. And in the old days, we would give the students CDs or some other kind of deliverable that they would leave with. You know, my joke these days is, you know, if you give a kid a CD, they don't know what it is. They want to know why they're getting that. They almost are knowing more about albums now than CDs.
Yeah, since it is making a big comeback. It's crazy.
They're cool. But yeah, so the point is that the projects that are created on board, they really belong collectively to the group that did it. So if you're a high school student and you participated in that project and you're putting your college application together, or you're demonstrating your ability to cooperate, to produce to a potential employer, then it's an asset that you have that you can use.
Last question before we wrap up here. Since 1998, you've been doing this. Have you had any students that came through the bus that's kind of made music their career? Have you heard from anybody that's actually done that?
Yeah, there are many, many examples of that, but I actually am going to ask Jeff to give you that report, because there's a student that he met years ago who he has continued to stay in touch with, and her family.
All right, Jeff, this one's for you then.
Yeah, Brian is referring to a student named Julia Easterlin, who was a high school student when we rolled through her town in Georgia. And, you know, she was always interested in music, but never really had too many opportunities to really collaborate and produce something. And so as, you know, she was in high school, they were looking, you know, she and her mom were kind of debating what her future would be. And she really wanted to do something creative. And her mom really wanted to let her go into orthodontics or... You know.
Where the money is, of course.
Exactly. My parents actually did the same.
Well, I have a daughter that's taking acting classes, and she's in her third year of college. And I keep... trying to say, maybe you should take a business class here on the side too. I don't know. As parents, you know, getting into music is, that sounds like you might be homeless one day because it didn't work out for you. So there, as a parent, that's an honest fear that, oh boy, I don't know. So as a parent myself, I encourage her for the acting stuff, but I also want her to have a backup plan. So this is a girl whose parents really wasn't hype on her pursuing music, but then she got on the bus and...
Yeah, as you said, it's a scary thing, but so we identified that she had a real talent, and you know she stood out, and so we encouraged her, and I actually had the opportunity to speak with her mother and say, you know, your daughter really does have something special, so you know some latitude to explore this could really pay off. She wound up doing a summer program while she was still in high school. She did a summer program at Berklee College of Music, and then wound up getting to attend Berklee College of Music and graduate. And she's now a recording artist. She's had some songs that she's co-written, chart on.
Did she change her name to Taylor Swift or something?
No,
and that girl was.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So she's you know, a great example of someone whose name you actually, you know, is not, you know, Taylor Swift, but she's getting to follow her dream, and she's a working, creative, songwriting musician.
How does that make you feel personally?
It's pretty amazing. I mean, it's one of those things where we know we touch a lot of lives, and we know that in kind of a broad sense. But to be able to look at one person who you know for a fact you had a concrete influence on, and they wound up doing something that they really, really love, like, has as much impact as knowing that, you know, there are actually lots and lots of stories that are just like hers.
So this is a very rewarding career path for you.
It is, yeah. That's why I've been doing it as long as I have.
Guys, I really appreciate you letting me come in and take some of your time on the bus. Anything you want to put out there before we wrap up?
I guess the other thing is just to tell people quickly about the John Lennon Songwriting Contest, because that's open to songwriters all around the world. And the contest entry fees go to help support the Lennon Bus. So it's kind of a good win-win in that regard. You know, we've had as many as 20,000 entries in any given year. We've had a lot of artists that are now very successful who have been former winners. Megan Trainor, All About That Bass, won our Valentine's Day contest 2 years ago. As a young person, the band Magic and their song Rude, the lead singer in that is a former World category winner in the John Lennon contest. American authors who have the hit song Best Day of My Life that's, you know, crazy popular right now, they're former winners. So yeah, for anybody out there that's a songwriter or knows a songwriter, it's a great program. We're in our 19th year with that, and
now that's just lyrical, or is that actually producing music?
No, it's about the song. So it's about the music and the words. If it's if it's not an instrumental, we accept instrumentals as well. But yeah, it's a songwriting opportunity. You write a song and you upload it to us. And we have some amazing judges, big celebrity artists, a lot of professional writers help with the judging as well. And we just kicked off our love song contest, this year's Valentine's contest, yesterday. And you can go to JLSC, John Lennon Songwriting Contest.com, to find out more about it.
Jeff, Brian, thanks very much, and continued success.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.